Actually, welcome everyone to today's internet seminar. My name is Jean Balance, and I'm coming to you from the EPA's Technology Innovation and Field Services Division, where I'll be here to serve as our online moderator. We have already been joined by one of our instructors, Joseph Bruss, and we do expect to have another instructor joining us, Kathleen Curry, in just a few moments. Our session today will look at the fiscal year 2013 EPA Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Grant Application Guidelines and the request for proposals. Our seminar has been sponsored today by the EPA's Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization. Again, we're going to run from approximately 3 p.m. Eastern until 5 p.m. Eastern. Before we begin the technical portion of today's broadcast, though, I'm going to cover a couple of housekeeping items, and I've moved along to our housekeeping slide for those of you that are following along with a printed hard copy. Our entire session today will be offered online through a new meeting tool called Adobe Connect. So when you registered for today's session, you would have received a confirmation email from me, Jean Ballant, with all the details and information on how to test your system and join us online for the live broadcast. We did postpone today's delivery from its original scheduled date. So we were supposed to host today's session last week, but due to inclement weather, we actually had to reschedule it for today. All of the information is exactly the same. The only difference is a new date and time. All participants from last week were automatically re-registered for today's delivery, and you should have received a reminder and confirmation message from us via email with the information on how to participate today. So from that email, you can refer to the seminar homepage, and on that homepage, you can download a copy of the presentation materials, as well as click a button that says Go to Seminar in the upper left corner. That'll actually bring you to a page where you can identify yourself, check in online, and then join us in the live interactive broadcast. We'd encourage everybody to join us online if you can, because it's a much more interactive forum, and there might be some elements of the broadcast that you miss out on if you're simply following along by phone. By default, all audio is available and streamed online for our attendees, so you should be able to actually listen to the entire broadcast using just your computer or mobile device. If you're having any problems with the online audio, I'd encourage you to first take a look at your own local volume settings. Sometimes you have to turn up your speaker volume or go into the sound control panel on your computer and boost the speaker output. Some of our participants have also found that wearing a pair of headphones can help with that audio. If you have any difficulty with that online audio, simply type in a message to me in the lower window on the right side, the Q&A window, and you can request the call-in number. I'll be happy to provide that toll-free number that we've given to any of our participants. All of the telephone lines are currently on a global mute, and we ask that you remain on that global mute to help cut down on background noises or other audio disruptions. When we do take a break for Q&A, you'll be able to take yourself off of mute by hitting pound, or the little number sign, and 6. But we'd ask that you remain on the global mute, so don't hit that key until we take a break for Q&A. We are requesting, if possible, that our participants use a new feature, an electronic Q&A window in the lower right corner of your screen, to type up your comments or questions or report any technical issues you might encounter. So if you, again, need the call-in number, are looking for information about the guidelines where you can download a copy of the slides, have other outstanding questions or comments, just type them up into the Q&A window and hit the little cartoon bubble to the right that will privately submit them to me. You can submit your questions at any time. You don't need to wait until designated points to do that. And in fact, we'd encourage you to type them up as soon as they occur to you so we can build up a healthy queue before we take a break for live Q&A. The entire session is being recorded, and in fact, you've already received an email directing you to the original delivery of the session today. As soon as we finish today's live delivery, we'll go ahead and work on that archive, and in usually 1 week or so, we'll be able to provide you with an email automatically directing you to the new recorded version of today's session, and you feel free to forward that email on to anyone that you think will find it useful. Go ahead and go over to one more screenshot again. You're able to look at the slides online in a large window that's occupying the majority of your screen. As we move through the materials, the slides will change, so you really don't need to do anything other than sit back and watch as we go through the live broadcast. In the upper right corner, you'll see a little Sponsored By logo. Just below that, there's a window of related URLs, and I'll draw your attention to specifically the Fiscal Year 13 Grant Guidelines URL, the top one up there. You can click on any one of the URLs and press the Browse To button to open the websites up locally on your own computer at any time during the session today, and it won't be a disruption to anyone else. For those of you that are watching the recorded version, those URLs are also active for you, so you guys can pull these up just like our live participants did. And then just below that is the all-important Q&A window, where you can type your comments, questions, or report any technical problems at the very bottom. Click the little cartoon bubble to privately submit it, and we'll work with you to either ask the questions out loud at designated times, or again, help troubleshoot any problems you might be having. If you have any difficulties viewing the slides, there is a full screen button that appears in the upper right corner of the slide window. You're welcome to click that at any time to expand the slides and make them bigger. And Joe, I think with that, that's the end of my technical reminders for everyone. And I'm going to go ahead and turn things over to Joe Bruff, who's joining us from the EPA's Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization for today's seminar. Joe, whenever you're ready.
Thanks, Jane. And I hope everyone can hear me okay. I apologize ahead of time if I get into a coughing fit since I'm battling a cold here at home. But we're going to go ahead and start now on slide number 6, the agenda for today. First, I'd like to provide kind of an overview of the history of the Brownfields Job Training Program, and then discuss briefly how we renamed the program to the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Grants. I'll then provide an overview of the application process, the threshold criteria, which are evaluated on a pass or fail basis, and then the ranking evaluation criteria, attachments, application tips, next steps, additional resources, and questions. And hopefully Kathleen Curry has joined or will join soon, and I will turn over the presentation to her around the ranking evaluation section. Next slide. On page 7 here is a photograph of one of our past job training grantees. This is the Milwaukee Community Service Corps. Next slide. On page 8. So the history of the program. The first seeds of the Brownfields Job Training Program and of the Brownfields Program itself emerged in the early 90s, reflecting EPA's growing concern for environmental equity, later known as environmental justice issues. For those of you that aren't familiar with the Brownfields Program, the Job Training Grant Program is just one of several grants that the Brownfields Program administers. We also have the Brownfields Assessment, Brownfields Cleanup, Revolving Loan Fund, and other grant programs. Among the lessons learned from the very first EPA Brownfields pilot grants was the realization that communities surrounding these brownfield sites were not benefiting from the job opportunities created by their assessment and cleanup. EPA realized that these brownfields-related jobs were being filled by environmental professionals from other cities due to a lack of environmental training among local workforces. Next slide. So while EPA had no resources allocated for job training during the initial years of the program, the agency had already collaborated with the Hazardous Materials Training and Research Institute, that's out of Eastern Iowa Community College, to offer environmental education and training program assistance to community colleges located near Superfund and other hazardous waste sites. With the goal of adding a job training component to the Brownfields program, EPA tapped the expertise of a number of other federal partners, such as the National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences, who is still a really important partner to this day. Next slide. This is kind of a timeline of the grant program. I'm not going to go through all of the dates, but I'll mention a few. We do have a memorandum of understanding that was signed with the Department of Labor in the very early days. I'll talk later that under this grant opportunity, grant funds cannot be used for administrative costs or life skills training. The grant funds are primarily used for environmental training. So we look for those partnerships with organizations that have Workforce Investment Act funds, such as those under the Department of Labor or Workforce Investment Boards. In 1998, EPA awarded the first 11 Brownfields Job Training Grants. Next slide. And in 2002, under the Small Business Liability Relief and Brownfields Revitalization Act, there was legislation that provided for the first time, gave EPA the authority to provide grants for training to facilitate site assessment and the remediation of brownfield sites. As of November 2012, more than 11,100 individuals have completed training, and of those, 7,900 have obtained employment in the environmental field, with an average starting hourly wage of approximately $14. We're really proud of the high placement rate for this program of 71%, and we want to continue that strong success. Next slide. So in 2010 and 2011, the Brownfields program led an effort to more closely collaborate on workforce development and job training with other programs within the EPA. These programs include the Office of Resource Conservation and Recovery, or the Solid Waste Office, the Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation, the Office of Underground Storage Tanks, the Center for Program Analysis, who is concerned with placing renewable energies on formerly contaminated sites, the Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention that has a strong environmental health and safety focus, the Office of Wastewater Management, and the Office of Emergency Management. Next slide. So the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Program is designed to recruit, train, and place unemployed and severely underemployed residents. Sirens in the background. From communities impacted by the presence of a variety of waste facilities, blighted properties, and other contaminated sites for environmental jobs that may otherwise be filled from outside the affected community. The goal was to also develop a job training program that through a cooperative agreement will offer an opportunity for expanded training in other environmental media outside the traditional scope of brownfields hazardous waste. So for many years, we received proposals that were very strong, but we really didn't have the statutory authority to fund those proposals. Thus, we created the partnership. I think it goes without saying that there's been a lot of buzz and focus now on green jobs. It was a huge focus under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And so as a result of this growing concern for environmental training, the Brownfields program decided to collaborate with other programs across the agency. So another purpose of the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Program is to further environmental justice by ensuring that residents, including low-income, minority, and tribal communities living in communities historically affected by economic disinvestment, health disparities, and environmental contamination, have an opportunity to reap the benefits of revitalization. Next slide. So through this expanded program, graduates develop wider skill sets that improve their ability to secure full-time sustainable employment in various aspects of hazardous and solid waste management and within the larger environmental field, including water quality improvement and chemical safety. For a long time, we had heard that in many instances, brownfields assessment and cleanup projects could be short-term or contractual in nature. So we knew that we wanted to provide multidisciplinary training to individuals that were entering this program. That would help them not only secure a job, but actually provide a career path for them. So it would also provide them employment through different seasons. We know that many times remediation projects aren't taking place in the winter, so you know they earn additional certifications such as hazardous waste transportation or a commercial driver's license that's going to help them make it through the year and not become unemployed again. In addition to the focus of the program stated above, under this year's FY13 competition, applicants from communities affected by recent manufacturing plant closures, 2007 or later, or experiencing other significant economic disruptions are anticipated to receive some funding preference. Under the expanded job training model, communities also have more flexibility to provide different types of environmental training that reflect local labor market assessments and employers' hiring needs. So ultimately, this expanded program is really intended to give communities more flexibility to meet the different hiring needs. Next slide. Program requirements. Proposed training programs must target unemployed and underemployed individuals. Applicants will be evaluated on the extent to which they have partnered and secured hiring commitments with local contractors and other stakeholders or EPA-funded projects for brownfields, Superfund sites, underground storage tanks, landfills, oil spill sites, and all the other different types of EPA-funded activities are taking place. Applicants should establish procedures to ensure that graduates will be employed in environmental work that involves these activities. So we really want to make the linkage. Next slide. Applicants may choose, in addition to brownfields hazardous waste training, to deliver a variety of environmental training listed below in items 1 through 6. So if you did submit a proposal last year, make sure that you're aware that there was a change. In the past, we required various types of environmental training, but this year applicants will have the flexibility to choose what other types of training can be provided. It will not be a requirement. The only required training is the HAZWOPR training. Training may include all of the items in 1 through 6, none of the items, or multiple items from the list. Please note that applicants have the option to deliver all the training at either awareness level or advanced levels. Applicants must indicate the type of training and at what level the training will be delivered in their transmittal or cover letter. Applicants also have the option to deliver only brownfields hazardous waste training. As noted in the 2013 guidelines, EPA selection official, when making funding decisions, may take into consideration and give preference to applicants who choose to deliver multiple types of training. Next slide. So, the different types of training. Different types of training include leaking underground storage tank site assessment and corrective action with a focus on training in the remediation of high priority leaking underground storage tank sites. The second type of training is solid waste management or cleanup. The third type, Superfund site cleanup training, such as innovative and alternative treatment technologies, wastewater treatment training, emergency response training, and enhanced environmental health and safety training. I'd also point out that we have posted frequently asked questions, and one of those FAQs, which is listed on the Brownfields website, describes what innovative and alternative treatment technologies are, if individuals are wondering on the line right now what that means. Next slide. Additional eligible uses of grant funds. Other examples of eligible uses of grant funds include, some of these go without saying, but personnel costs for instructors to conduct training, fringe benefits and or personnel costs, costs for screening and placement of individuals, costs for training materials and work gear, implementation of job development outreach activities. Next slide. And then I'm not going to read through all of these, but this is an extensive list of many of the different types of environmental training that can be provided under this grant opportunity. I've bolded here training on technologies that use alternative energy, solar, wind, or geothermal power, or alternative fuels, including preparing sites for renewable energy installation. This was not eligible last year, but it is, again, eligible this year. Next slide. We're now on slide 20. Again, here are other additional types of training. Next slide. I'm not going to read through all these because I want to allow time for questions and answers at the end. Slide 22. Additional types of training such as LEED or Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. Training in building trades related to constructing beams, caps, synthetic barriers, pumping facilities, and similar structures to remediate contamination. I want to point out that these grant funds cannot be used for general training in construction or the trades. Training in national historic preservation, vapor intrusion, computer-aided design and drafting, etc. Applicants must indicate what other types of training they propose to deliver in their course outline. And the course outline is an attachment that is required with your proposal. Next slide. So as a result of the various types of training, some people might question, what are the different types of jobs individuals of this program may go on to? These jobs can include environmental technician, recycling center operator, emergency response technician, GIS, treatment storage and disposal facility technician, health and safety, biotechnology, sampling, calibration or analysis, underground storage tank removal, hazardous materials transporter, or a wastewater treatment facility operator. And there's many other jobs as well. Next slide. Other eligible costs include costs associated with health exams, drug testing, or licensing fees, costs used to cover rental fees associated with training facilities or minor alteration of existing facilities. Of course, you know, while we provide an extensive list here, the reviewers are going to want to see that the bulk of the grant funds are going towards environmental training, and that it's not just going to benefit your organization that's applying. So while the, you know, cost for an instructor or a licensed trainer is an eligible use of grant funds, again, we really want to see the cost going directly towards training of individuals. Next slide. Grant funds may not be used for the following activities. I already mentioned training in general construction skills and the trades, conducting actual site assessments or cleanup, conducting response activities, and here's the big one, general or life skills education activities, such as remedial classes in math and reading, job readiness training, GED costs, child care costs, vehicle or medical insurance, etc. Given that the populations that we're serving who oftentimes have severe or significant barriers to employment, these life skills training is really critical to the success of placing individuals, but our grant funds cannot be used for those purposes. We knew in the early days that the Department of Labor, through the Workforce Investment Act, issued millions of dollars in funds to organizations across the country. So we really look as reviewers to see if applicants have partnered with these organizations to offer these critical services. Other ineligible uses of grant funds. On the next slide, stipends for students, including on-the-job training costs, or scholarship funds to support students' enrollment in college courses, membership fees, providing food or light refreshments to employees, except at graduation ceremonies, and of course the other general and allowable costs such as lobbying, fundraising, alcohol, etc. Next slide. There is not a match for this grant opportunity, please note. And please, this is another big one. Administrative costs under this grant opportunity are not eligible. If you're a community college and you have overhead costs, I know this might be a big turnoff to you, but these grant funds cannot be used for administrative or indirect costs. And this is a result of the statute. Specifically says in the statute that the grant funds cannot be used for these costs. Next slide. This provides a little information about the strategic plan linkage for the agency. I don't think I need to go through these in detail, but you will be asked as an applicant to provide information on the outputs and outcomes of your proposed project. Next slide. The competitive grant process. So historically, EPA has set a high standard for successful job training grant applicants. In past years, an average of 1 out of every 4 applications was funded per solicitation. In FY11, EPA received a record number of proposals, and only 1 out of, I would say, every 11 or 12 applicants was funded. From year to year, 90% or so of previously unfunded applicants who reapplied were successful. So while you might find the RFP intimidating, I really want to stress that if you're not successful this year, resubmit again. This grant opportunity has become more competitive, but you know, I would say that on average, The EPA probably provides about 50% of grant funds to those that have received a job training grant in the past, but the other 50% goes to new grant applicants. FY13's total estimated funding available for the program is approximately $2.4 million. So we anticipate awarding approximately 12 cooperative agreements with maximum values of $200,000 each for a three-year project period. Next slide. To begin the application process, you can visit the URLs that are listed here. You can visit the OSWR Grants and Funding homepage, or you can visit the Brownfields website. You can also look at grants.gov. Please note, if you are looking for the RFP on grants.gov, where it says full announcement, that link does not work. You'll have to scroll down on the grants.gov webpage to find the RFP, where it says, I believe, links to more information. Applicants may choose to submit application packages either in hard copy format or by submitting a complete electronic version via grants.gov. Don't wait until the last minute to submit electronically, because I've heard many times issues with grants.gov. Next slide. For paper submission or hard copy submission of your proposal, you will be required to submit two complete packages, including all of the documents identified, with one copy to Environmental Management Support, contractor to EPA, as well as a copy of your proposal to your respective EPA Regional Job Training Coordinator, which is listed in Section 7 of the guidelines. Again, you may also submit electronically through grants.gov. Next slide. Proposals are due April 9th. They may be sent through the U.S. Postal Service, or Commercial Delivery Service, or through grants.gov. Next slide. Here is another picture of a past job training grantee. This is Oregon Tradeswomen. Oregon Tradeswomen is unique because they serve females, and I think that's our only grantee that does so. Next slide. The threshold criteria. So the threshold criteria are evaluated on a pass or fail basis. The threshold criteria include applicant eligibility, demonstration of non-duplication of other federally funded environmental job training programs, the required HAZWOPR training, and your funding amount. The threshold criteria are pretty clear and easy. Proposals must not request more than $200,000 or for project periods in excess of 3 years. So the $200,000, that is for the full project period. That is not an annual funding amount. Applicants who received a job training grant in fiscal year 2012 are ineligible to apply in fiscal year 2013 unless proposing to serve a different city. EPA will notify applicants not meeting the threshold criteria within 15 calendar days of the failed determination. Applications failing any one of the threshold criteria will not be given further consideration, and their proposals will not advance to the ranking evaluation process. Next slide. So what are the different types of eligible applicants under this RFP? Nonprofit organizations, municipalities, quasi-governmental organizations, governmental entities, regional councils, redevelopment agencies, states, tribes, workforce investment boards, and colleges and universities. Please note that tribes from Alaska are not eligible to apply as a statutory restriction. I didn't have anything to do with that, but our statute, unfortunately, does not allow Alaskan tribes to apply, except the Metlakatla tribe. Nonprofit entities or organizations are eligible for funding, but they must provide proof of current nonprofit designation with their proposal. Next slide. This is probably the most important one, or the most, the threshold criterion that I receive most questions about. Demonstration that proposed project does not duplicate other federally funded environmental job training programs. applicants must demonstrate that the proposed training project does not duplicate other federally funded programs for environmental job training in the target community. For example, some of these other federal programs that provide environmental training dollars include the National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences, such as the Hazardous Waste Management or Hazardous Waste Worker Training Program, the Department of Labor, the Department of Energy, etc. Proposed training programs do not duplicate another nonprofit organization's or EPA-funded environmental technician training curriculum in the same geographical area that your proposal is targeting. The EPA doesn't want to duplicate other environmental training programs. And I think many applicants on the phone might be aware that Congress is looking very carefully at the duplication of training programs. So we ask that you do a screening. Perhaps there might be another hazardous waste worker training program in your target community, but maybe that program's only serving individuals between 18 to 21 years old. So maybe your proposed program's going to target individuals of a different age group, or you're going to provide other types of environmental training that aren't being offered through these other projects. But we ask you to demonstrate non-duplication. Next slide. Federal agencies maintain lists of these grant programs on the following sites. You can refer to these. Next slide. If you are listed on any of these websites as a recipient, you must demonstrate how services under the proposed project will complement but not duplicate. I just spoke about that, such as the different target audience, different types of certification, et cetera. If you're not listed on the above website but are the recipient of other federally funded environmental or green job training programs, you must similarly demonstrate how services under this proposed project will complement but not duplicate. Next slide. The next threshold criterion, required HAZWOPR training. This, again, is the only required environmental training that is needed. We require this because we really want to stress the importance of environmental health and safety. In many instances, an individual is not going to be able to walk into a site unless they have their HAZWOPR certification. So this is a pretty applicable type of environmental training. The course is required for all trainees participating in your program. So you might have different cycles, but the HAZWOPR training needs to be required of everyone. Next slide. Application packages must substantially conform to the outline and content detailed in Section 4C. This provides information about the page limitations, 3 pages for the transmittal or cover letter, 15 pages for the narrative proposal that includes responses to threshold and ranking criteria, and 15 pages for the attachments. All application materials must be submitted in English, including support letters. Do not include binders, spiral binding, or color printing. Photos and graphics will not be considered. So if you're an applicant from Puerto Rico, I'm sorry, but please submit your support letters in English. The transmittal letter and narrative proposal must be typed on letter-sized paper with a font size no smaller than 12 points, please. Next slide. The ranking criteria. This is where I'm going to pass it over to Kathleen now. Kathleen, are you there?
And Kathleen, if you joined us on the phone lines, you will need to hit #6 to unmute your phone.
Are you there?
We can hear you, Kathleen.
Okay. Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining. I have the slide. Hold on 1 second while I reduce the slide. It's 71%, 100%. Okay. The ranking criteria overview. Basically, you must directly and explicitly address all the criteria as part of the narrative proposal. The response must be on point. Each application will be evaluated and scored under the point system with a maximum of 100 points possible. Each application will be evaluated according to the five evaluation criteria. Each of the five criterion is comprised of sub-factors that vary in scoring value. Proposals meeting the threshold criteria will be evaluated based on the ranking criteria disclosed in Section 5B. Ranking criteria for the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Grant is the title of 5B. Next page. The five criterion, five individual criterion are community need worth a maximum of 20 points, the training program description, and anticipated outcomes and outputs. Maximum points to be earned is 23, programmatic capabilities, 24, community and employer partnership, 25 maximum points. Budget resources, including leveraging, 8 points, with a possible total points per proposal of 100 points. Slide 40. The community need is worth 20 points. And you'll notice for the most part, each of the slides is a mirror reflection of what's in your guidelines. The only difference is rather than in complex paragraphs and sentences, I've pretty much bulleted everything to try to simplify and to clarify what we're asking of you in the guidelines. That's done purposely so that this is your time. If there's anything in the guidelines that is confusing in any of the criterion, you can ask the questions during our Q&A. The community need, the first up is Section A, or Subfactor A, Community Description. We're asking that you provide a very detailed description of your community. In this, what you're looking to describe is the need. What makes your community needing this grant to provide the funds for environmental job training? What overwhelming indicators are there? You're to use the sample table format to provide demographic information about your community. And this includes the population, the unemployment rate, poverty rate, percent of minority, per capita income, and or other relevant statistics. You're to discuss how these demographic indicators relate to current challenges and environmental justice concerns, such as the disproportionate siting of polluting facilities or a proliferation of brownfield sites in your community, including environmental, social, public health, and economic issues as a result of the presence in your community. As you see, that's in italics. That's because it's to be emphasized. We understand that there's an economic crisis going on in our country, but for this particular grant, you must link back all of the indicators to the presence of brownfields in your community as being the impact, as being the cause of the impact. You are to demonstrate how you will recruit and train unemployed or underemployed individuals of a specific population indicative of needs, such as ex-offenders, veterans. And notice the start note. Applicants will be evaluated on the extent to which demographic statistics such as these exceed the county, city, state, and or national averages. So make sure when you're doing your table that you provide a contrast of your targeted community against the county, city, state, and or national averages. The table that we're suggesting you use is on the next slide, slide number 41. And you notice how it's set up to show the suggested targeted communities stats against the county and city, state, and national. And notice below, we provided the sites for the data that we provided here in the table. Make sure you cite your resources. The statistics are no good without the cited resources in the table. Slide 42. Under community need, we want you to detail the methods and results of your most recent labor market assessment and employer surveys you have conducted in your community. Now notice the note again, you may not be required to conduct an LMA or an employer survey if one of your committed partners has already done so recently, such as your local work enforcement board or the economic development agency of your municipality, Department of Labor for your state. Just remember, wherever you get your data, you cite the source. Second part of sub-factor B, you're to link back again. To what extent do these results indicate a demand for skilled environmental professionals with the certifications being proposed for incorporation into your curriculum? Slide 43, sub-factor, or number two of sub-factor training programs, descriptions, anticipated outcomes, and outputs. The training program description, anticipated outcomes and outputs is 23-4, and the first sub-factor under this A, detail your proposed training program in the sample table format provided below and include the course name, the type of training, awareness versus advanced level training, types of certifications to be earned, numbers of hours per course, total numbers of hours for the program, the course schedule, list of certificates to be earned, and if you know, and if you have already selected your training provider, just be aware that if your selected training provider has been selected, that you must certify that the selection was made in compliance with the requirements of 40 CFR 31, Part 31 or Part 30 procurement requirements. Now, also note that you are to add or remove columns, tasks, and suggested table formats, providing the guidelines as necessary to accurately and fully detail your training program. Next slide shows the training program table format that we're asking you to follow. To what extent will the certifications graduates earn ensure employment and apply to the hiring needs of employers in your community? To what extent is the proposed curriculum comprehensive, realistic, and detailed? Realistic being, will it match the labor demands in your targeted community? Realistic is, will you be able to place those graduates in long-term sustainable jobs? Make sure that you indicate whether the certificates that will be earned during the training are programmatic, state, or federally recognized certificates. Next slide, slide 40. Okay, it's not going down. Oh, that's wrong. Okay. 45. Sub-factor B under TPO, outputs and outcomes. There's a sample table provided for you to show how we would like it laid out, and you should detail how many participants you are anticipating enrolling, the number of students you anticipate to graduate from the proposed training program, and the targeted placement rate of graduates in environmental employment. How will you evaluate progress towards achieving the expected short-term and long-term project outputs and outcomes, including, but not limited, to those identified in Section 1D. To what extent is your proposed timeline for achieving deliverables of the project as reflected in the attached milestone schedule clearly identified, detailed, and realistic? Outcomes and outputs are defined for you. So if you make sure you read them and you understand them. If there are any questions, this is the time for you to ask about them. in the definitions if there's not a clear understanding what an output is and or what an outcome is. Next slide, 46. So factor C, recruitment and screening. It's worth 4 points. Describe the process you plan to utilize to recruit students and market your environmental workforce development and job training program. Discuss the screening, retention, and attrition strategies and processes that will be utilized by your program. To what extent will fees, if any, for such things as licensing, certification, and medical examination fees burden the participants of your program? Be aware that such fees collected will be considered program income under 40 CFR Part 30 and 31. To what extent are the training facilities accessible by public transportation, for instance? Walking distance, is there available parking for those that drive? And if it is not accessible, how do you plan to address that situation so that your trainees can get to class? Next slide. Subfactor D, program support. Describe the job search support and resources for participants of your job training program. To what extent will your organization assist with initial job placement and continuous employment for participants? Remember, your organization is required to track your graduates for a minimum of 1 year. And we highly recommend that you allot that third year for just tracking and placement. You train the first 2 years of your grant. And then the third year, you just spend tracking the progress and placement of your students. And the reason why we suggest that is we've lost a lot of valuable data because most people would train right up to the end of their grant or within 6 months to term end. And then they have no funds left to track those students afterwards, and there's really no medium for them to report it back to us. So we really would like for that third year to be set aside for tracking and placement only. And that means you have the budget for it, too. To what extent?
Kathleen, this is Joe. I'm sorry. I would also just point out that applicants should not wait until the very last year to start placement. As soon as that first training cycle is complete, placement should start. So
agreed.
I didn't want people to think that, oh, wait until the last year to start placing.
Oh, yeah. No, you should have, actually, you should have jobs in line before that first class begins. That's the reason why for the survey and for the labor market analysis. To what extent will you utilize federal and local hiring incentives, such as finding out about first source or local hiring ordinances, tax incentives, wage subsidies, etc. Those type of incentives that will increase the likelihood of employment for program graduates in your community. And lastly, how will you market these incentives to the employers? And as Joe spoke to you earlier, the minimal acceptable placement rate for fiscal year 13 is 70%. So if you plan on training 20, we expect at least 14 to be placed of those 20. Is that right? That's good math, right? Yeah. Okay. Slide 48, programmatic capability, third criterion. Grant management system. You're to describe, and also just a note here, the regional offices job training will be responsible for reviewing and scoring your programmatic capabilities. For those that are experienced, this is very important for you. Make sure your acres and all of your reportables are in so that when it's time for us to review, we can state that all programmatic requirements have been met. You don't want to lose points here. Programmatic capability, we want to know about your grants management system. To describe your management system, you have in place to direct activities under the grant. You include a brief description of your project manager and staff and a discussion of expertise, qualifications, and experience. Discuss the means you have to retain project leadership or recruit qualified staff should employee turnover occur. Star that one 2 or 3 times. I cannot tell you how many applicants lose points because they neglect to respond to this particular category under this sub-factor. Describe the systems you have in place to acquire additional expertise and resources required to perform the proposed project. Again, start to make sure that you answer it. If you intend to contract for the necessary expertise, describe the system you have in place to acquire that expertise. And again, please refer to Section 2, addresses procurement. Okay, where was I? Section, I've lost it now. Okay, forgive me. I hit the wrong button. I went to the end of the the end of the slide. What slide was I on?
I believe you're on 49.
Okay,
you're looking
great.
At B, organizational experience.
Okay. I don't know what I did wrong here, but now I can't get back to it. The problem is I made it really large so I can see it, and so a lot of my, there it is. Okay, 49 then, right?
That's correct. That's where you should continue on.
Right, organizational experience. I apologize. Discuss your organization's and training providers' experience in working with minority, unemployed veterans, and ex-offenders in the community you propose to serve. Again, a lot of organizations lose points because they fail to respond to this. If you don't have the experience, you just put, we have not had experience, but hopefully you realize this and you've gotten a community partner that does have experience with it. We want to make sure that you address it. Not necessarily that you have the experience, but you realize the importance and need to be able to have someone with the expertise working with you for these underserved group of people. Describe any previous experience your organization has had in environmental training as it relates to your proposed curriculum. Again, if you have not had it, make sure that you partner with someone that does. If you do not have an instructor on staff and are considering subcontracting or subgranting to obtain these services, detail the criteria you will use to select these services. And if you have a training provider under consideration, provide a commitment letter from the training provider to your organization. Okay. Discuss any experience your organization has had in the employment and training field at large. Again, people lose unnecessary points by failing to respond to these criteria. It doesn't matter whether you have the experience or not. Well, I shouldn't say it doesn't matter. If you don't, make sure you have a partner that does. But the most important thing is to make sure that you respond to each one. Slide 50. Audit findings. Describe any adverse audit findings. If you have had problems with the administration of any grant, compliance reporting, expenditures of funds, please describe how you have corrected or are correcting the problem. If your organization has never received an adverse audit finding, state so. Don't skip this sub-factor without responding one way or the other, because you will lose points. Sub-factor D, past performance and accomplishments. If you have ever received an EPA job training grant, please respond to item I below. Or is that Roman numeral, little I below. If you have not received an EPA job training grant but have received other federal or non-federal assistance agreements, an assistance agreement is a grant or a cooperative agreement, not a contract. Big difference. Including EPA brownfields assessment, revolving loan fund, or cleanup grants, please respond to Roman numeral 2 below. If you have never received any type of federal or non-federal assistance agreement, please state so in your proposal and you will receive a neutral score, 6 points for this criterion. And please note, failure to respond may result in 0 points for this criterion. And also a starred note, in evaluating the applicant's response to this criterion, EPA may consider relevant information from EPA files and or from other federal and or non-federal grantors to verify or supplement information provided by the grant, by the applicant. Slide 52. Currently, this is the first Roman numeral one. Currently or has ever received an EPA Brownfields job training grant. You're to identify each of the EPA job training grants you currently have or have received in the past. You are to demonstrate how you successfully managed the grants and successfully perform all phases of work under the previous or existing grant by providing information on the following. Funds expenditure, the balance of grant funds not drawn down, funds remaining. If you have an open EPA job training grant, please indicate your need for additional funding based on the remaining funds. Slide 53, compliance with grant requirements. Information regarding your compliance with the work plan, schedule, and terms and conditions. Are you making sufficient progress towards achieving the expected results of the grant? Information regarding your timely quarterly and annual reporting, as well as ongoing acres reporting. We want to know about your accomplishments, the number of individuals you committed in your proposal to train, and the actual number that you trained and placed, and also the placement, overall placement rate. Next slide. Accomplishments continued here. We want to know whether the original anticipated training placement goals were met. If not, the steps that were taken to improve the program. Whether the data is accurately reflected in acres at the time of this proposal submission, and if not, why. Roman numeral 2 on a programmatic capabilities. This particular sub-factor are for those applicants that have not received the EPA job training grant but has received other federal or non-federal assistance agreements, including EPA ARC grants. Identify current and or prior federally and non-federally funded assistance agreements, including the EPA Brownfields grant you currently have or have received in the past. If you work with EPA on delivering a Superfund job training initiative, JTI project, please note that also. Provide information on no more than 5 of your most recent assistant agreements. Describe your history of successfully managing these agreements and performing the agreements, including information regarding your compliance with the work plan, scheduling, progress in terms of conditions. Information regarding your meeting and complying with reporting requirements, including quarterly reporting, technical reports, final reports, and data entry into ACRES as applicable. Next slide, slide 57. And this is ranking criteria 4, community and employment partnerships. This is also solid, that where you can't skip over, you have to make sure that you respond to all of the subcategories. And make sure your letters of support substantiate your statements regarding your partnerships and relationships. Describe any specific efforts that have been made to collaborate with Brownsville ARC grants, which is Assessment Revolving Loan Fund and Cleanup Grants, and or Superfund, federal facility, leaking underground storage tank, EPA-funded state or tribal-regulated corrective action, or landfill closure contractors, or wastewater treatment facilities in your community. We're asking that you provide a detailed statement on how these efforts will enhance and foster future employment for the job training graduates in the community. Again, we're requesting that you describe your organization's relationship with your local economic development office and how this relationship has resulted in placement of graduates with local contractors in your community, if such activities have occurred prior to this application. Remember also, whatever you discuss, make sure it is substantiated in a letter of support from your partner that you're discussing. If applicable, please provide letters of support for commitments from these organizations where they have made these commitments to assist with your training program, such as to provide on-the-job training or to hire graduates. And again, in these times, we do not expect an employer to be able to project we will hire 5 of your graduates in 2013. But what we do expect in a letter of commitment is that they will give consideration to your graduates and will consider them for interviews for any future openings that they may have. Next slide, 58. So factor B, community partnership building. We're asking for a description of your plan for how you will involve the affected community, your targeted community. And this is through local community groups, workforce investment boards, and academic institutions located in or near the affected community in the proposed job training program. To what extent did you notify, involve, or hold any public comment sessions in the target community before applying or during the development of your proposal? Make sure each letter of support, LOS, is on the partner's letterhead with a current date, and we agreed within 6 months of the application closing date is considered current and includes acknowledgement of the proposed project, support for the project, organization's role, commitment for the project term, and any supplemental funding or in-kind commitments. Statements are made stronger if a dollar value is assigned to the committed in-kind service. Next slide, 59. Community partnership building. To what extent have the partners committed to providing non-environmental training such as GED attainment, life skills training, transportation, child care, personal protective equipment, etc.? Again, attach the letters of support indicating the commitments from these organizations as well as support for your proposal. And it's a very good idea that for anyone that or any organization that is listed in your proposal, that they be sent out a copy of the proposal with a cover letter confirming what the agreed upon partnership role will be, and so that if they're called and we do a random check of all of this, they'll have knowledge of the proposal, and they'll have in front of them what was agreed upon. and give them time enough to call you back and say, no, that's not quite what I said, too, so you can make corrections to your proposal before it's sent out. Describe how your program and partner's expertise ensures trainees are job ready and have the pre-employment skills needed to secure full-time work. Strong suggestion that you carefully review Section 2D and 2E before identifying a partner who you intend to provide EPA funds to under procurement contract or subgrant. Again, refer back to the requirements of 40 CFR Part 30 and 31, depending on whether you're a municipality or a nonprofit. Subfactor C, under community and employer partnership. This is the employer involvement, worth 13 points. Discuss to what extent the employer community, local businesses, environmental contractors, labor unions, site owners, for example, have been involved in the development of the proposed job training program. For instance, the curriculum development, advisory councils, apprenticeships, and or mentoring. Provide detailed information on specific efforts related to employer involvement, such as meeting dates, how many were attending, a list of who was in attendance, that occurred during the preparation of this proposal. To what extent have employers committed to hiring graduates of your proposed program? Discuss any partnerships you have established with employers who have hire graduates of your program in the past. And again, a note here for emphasis, provide the letters of support from past and prospective employers that affirm their involvement and commitment to the proposed program. The letters of support are imperative for maximum points for this criterion. Without the letters of support, statements are considered to be not substantiated and very little value, if any, is assigned to your response. Make sure each letter of support is on partner's letterhead with a current date and includes acknowledgement of the proposed project, support for the project, the organization's role or commitment for the project term, and any supplemental funding or in-kind commitments. Again, I emphasize the statement is made stronger by assigning a dollar value to committed in-kind services. Next slide. Ranking criteria, fifth criterion, budget resources. The budget, subfactor A. Use the table format provided to identify specific tasks for which EPA funding will be used. Show the cost by budget category associated with each task. Please note that the tasks provided in the table below are examples and not necessarily required. Make sure your budget reflects your proposed work plan. In addition to the budget table, describe in narrative format each task in detail, including the basis for the estimated cost as well as the projected outputs where possible, such as, for instance, student safety equipment for 100 students at a cost of $50 each for a total of $5,000. That's the narrative describing a budgeted amount. Note the starred bold statement below. EPA also encourages the applicants to set aside appropriate funding to support placement and required tracking upon completion of the last training class. And remember, as Joe stated, the placement is a continuation of the placement that should have been occurring throughout the training project, not to be held the last year of the program to try to place all graduates that were trained during the previous 2 years. And a narrative must accompany the budget table. You will lose, if not all your points, half your points, if that narrative does not accompany the budget table. Each category must be discussed, describing in detail its purpose, correlating work plan, activity, or task, the responsible party, cost, projected outcome, and output. Next slide, 62. This is a sample or this is the suggested table that we are requesting that you utilize for your budget table. Please note that there is a separate section for non-EPA project funding. It is optional that you use it, but it does make your proposal stronger if you show your leverage resources. And please, again, note the start statement below. Do not include tasks for activities, costs that are ineligible uses of funds in the EPA budget. This includes administrative costs, which on these grants are described in Appendix 1. For additional examples of ineligible uses or ineligible costs for grant funds, refer to the FAQs, and the website is given where you can find our FAQs for fiscal year 13. Next slide, slide 63. The budget narrative. I've pretty much gone over this. Short introduction before the budget chart outlining how you intend to spend the grant. You present the budget chart or table, and then you include the budget narrative explaining each of your tasks clearly and completely. And I've gone over what we consider completely. A basis for the estimated cost, project the outputs where possible, address each cost presented under the task, and again, the task should correlate with the proposed budget's work plan. The cost should appear reasonable based on the details in the description. List the responsible party assigned to complete the task or activity. And note again, the start statement. This is where many applicants lose points. Applicants must provide both the chart and the narrative to receive full points. Next slide, 64. Reminder, do not include tasks or activities or costs that are ineligible. Uses of funds under EPA's grants, such as indirect costs, they are ineligible. A list of prohibited uses of funds can, again, be found in Appendix 1 of the FY 2013 guidelines. Don't use acronyms like CBOs, which stands for community-based organizations. Spell them out. Allocate travel funds to attend the Brownfields Conference and the annual job training all grantees meeting. Make sure your budget table adds up across and down the columns to the total requested amount of funding, and remember the maximum amount of funding that can be requested is $200,000. Slide 65, so factor B, leveraging. To what extent are in-kind or partner commitments providing services resources to the proposed job training program? And examples of what extent we're looking for, staff time, life skills training, pre-employment training, student stipends, GED preparations, transportation, academic enhancement, counseling, et cetera. Clearly indicate means a letter of support, substantiating what you're stating in your proposal. Are all these commitments current and confirmed within the last 6 months? And it is in writing that is confirmed for these commitments. If not, what is the likelihood that these commitments will materialize during the project? What guarantees do you have that the commitments will be honored if you don't already have a written commitment? Describe how your organization will manage this grant in light of the administrative cost prohibition. Again, people lose points because they neglect to discuss this. And again, emphasis on the letters of support. Make sure the letters of support substantiate any statements made. Slide 66, leveraging again. When reviewing your budget, ensure that you demonstrate how you will leverage additional funds or in-kind services to carry out your project. Make sure to describe additional sources of internal and external funding already in place. Ask yourself, did you show EPA grant funds how EPA grant funds will be complemented by these additional funding sources or in-kind services? Again, assign an estimated monetary value to the in-kind services. If you do not currently have additional funding sources in place, indicate when and where you plan to look. I must admit, your proposal is a lot stronger with committed leverage resources than if you just say, we're going to look for it and we're going to do research if and when we get awarded the grant. That probably will knock you out of the running because you haven't done your homework. Did you indicate how these additional funds will stimulate economic development after your program has ended? In other words, what plans have you made to sustain this program after EPA funding is no longer available? Sustainability. Describe how your organization will manage this grant in light of the administrative cost prohibition. And again, we don't require a funding match. So levering isn't required, but it shows that you're planning to continue on and substantiate this program. And these are the VC, the other factors, and I'll let Joe take over from here. Joseph?
Thanks, Kathleen.
Mm-hmm.
So the selection official will take into consideration the other factors listed here in 5C. Making final selection recommendation, the selection official may consider these factors. Whether the applicant seeks to serve a community severely impacted by a manufacturing plant closure 2007 or later, including an auto plant closure or other significant economic disruption, fair distribution of funds between urban and non-urban areas, including funding the micro-communities or those communities with populations of 10,000 individuals or less, and rural communities or communities with populations of 20,000 or less, and not located within an MSA. Fair distribution of funds among EPA's 10 regions, and fair distribution of funds between new applicants and previous job training grant recipients. Other factors on the next slide include whether the applicant is a federally recognized tribe or a U.S. territory or is an organization that will serve tribal or territorial residents, whether the applicant seeks to serve a community severely impacted by a natural disaster 2005 or later, whether proposals seek to deliver training beyond brownfields hazardous waste, such as wastewater, water quality, underground storage tank removal, Superfund, solid waste, emergency response, or enhanced chemical safety training. These are the types of training listed in the beginning under Section 1, Items 1 through 6 that I spoke about in the beginning. Whether the applicant is a recipient of a HUD, DOT, or EPA Partnership for Sustainable Communities grant, and the proposed target area includes the same area served through PSC funding. That is a new factor this year. And also proposals that seek to serve areas designated as an empowerment zone or renewal community. Next slide. Excuse me, I'm sorry, my dog. Environmental justice. A community that bears a disproportionate impact of environmental contamination or faces adversely high cumulative environmental impacts, and proposals that also seek to serve veterans. Applicants must complete and submit the other factors checklist in Appendix 3 as part of their attachments. Failure to do so may affect the EPA's ability to consider these other factors during selection decisions. Next slide. Here is the proposal checklist. It gives all the page limitations. Please, please follow the page limitations. There's been many, many times every year where a proposal does not follow the page limitation requirements and pages in the proposal are not copied. There's nothing worse than when we're reading through the proposal and the budget section has not been copied because the applicant went over the page limit. So please follow this. Next slide. These are your attachments: documentation of applicant eligibility, if you're a nonprofit, that is, references, list, milestone, schedule, general letters of support. Letters should contain statements for support and confirmed commitments, as Kathleen mentioned. Next slide. Applicants that are not cities, counties, tribes, or states must provide documentation of current nonprofit status under federal, state, or tribal law, if applicable. Documentation of nonprofit status will not count against the attachment page limitations. You must have nonprofit status at the time of application. Next slide. Your references. This is a list. Please do not include letters. This differs from the letters of support. Provide a list with contact information from the following: two employers who've hired past participants of your program, two neighborhood or community-based organizations assisting in the development of your program, and two organizations from the employer community that have been involved in the development of your proposal and program. Next slide. A milestone schedule with start and completion dates for significant tasks. The tasks are listed below. Next slide. Attach general letters of support from community-based organizations, past or potential employers, and organizations involved in the development of your job training project, partners, or other stakeholders that support your proposed training. It's always good to see a variety of support letters from both governmental and especially non-governmental entities. Support letters will only impact scoring at the subfactors listed in Section 5B4. Community and employer partnerships.
Joe, this is Kathleen. Just wanted to emphasize, make sure that your community employer partners have a copy of your proposal.
Yes. Letters must be received with the proposal. Please do not submit letters after the due date. Those letters will not be attached to your proposal. Next slide. Here are some general tips, and I'm not going to read through all of these, but it goes without saying, read the entire guidelines. Don't recycle your proposal from last year because the guidelines have changed. Get mentoring from prior grantees. There's a list of all the past grantees on our website. Write as though the reader knows nothing about your community. You know, there's many instances where we know there's significant economic disruption, such as Detroit. But if you don't list it in your proposal, you can't get the points. Follow the instructions in Section 4 of the guidelines. Address all the criteria, even if they do not apply. Explain why they don't apply. And Kathleen mentioned, I want to point out, the federal tax incentives or hiring incentives. I suggest don't say, we don't have any first-source hiring ordinances in our community. We know that in many instances, not every community has a first-source hiring ordinance. However, there are federal tax incentives or federal hiring incentives that apply to everyone, so do your homework. Avoid using acronyms. Follow the cover letter outline. Use white space and obey the 15-page limit for the narrative proposal, the 3-page limit for the transmittal letter, and the 15-page limit for attachments. Next slide. Create a focus plan and show that you know how to implement the plan. Too much information is not necessarily a good thing. Quality beats quantity. Do not restate the evaluation criteria. Do not recycle the proposal you submitted last year. Clearly respond directly to the questions and the guidelines. Although your responses may seem repetitious, respond as many times as asked. Next slide. Address all the criteria. Highlight keywords. Identify information that you'll need to research or obtain to answer the questions, etc. Don't say we will if we get funding. Communities ready to go with established partnerships will garner more points. Don't say that we're going to involve the community if we get the grant. We want to know that the community was involved during the development of your proposal. Next slide. Here are useful dates. April 9th, again, is the application submission deadline. and we anticipate that the grants will be announced in June of this year. FY13 applications will be accepted through grants.gov, as mentioned. Next slide. The threshold criteria are evaluated by the regional EPA office. Programmatic capability will be scored by the region. National panels will convene and rank proposals. The Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response Assistant Administrator makes the final selections, and he will take into consideration the other factors that I mentioned. Next slide. Please take a look at the FAQs that I mentioned earlier. Begin compiling and organizing the required documentation. Conduct your employer survey if you haven't done so already. Request and collect individualized letters of support. Hold a public meeting. Contact partners for assistance. And you can contact your EPA regional job training coordinator or Kathleen or myself if you have eligibility questions. We will not review proposals. We will not provide information on how to respond to the ranking criteria. This is a competition, and we take that seriously. Next slide. Here is a list of the regional job training coordinators, also listed in Section 7 of the guidelines. Here are some web-based resources. If you haven't done so already, I highly recommend that you look at the EPA Brownfields webpage. That's the first bullet. The FAQs, the job training report, the federal and local tax hiring or hiring incentives fact sheet that we have on our webpage. Finally, here are a few photos. Here is the big day that all this is worth. This is the job training graduation. Here's Florida State College of Jacksonville and one of their graduation ceremonies. Next slide. Here is a tribal grantee, the absentee Shawnee Tribe of Oklahoma, a past job training grant recipient. And with that, I will now open it up for questions and turn it over to Jean.
Great. Thank you so very much, Joe. So just a reminder for those of you who have joined us online, we're taking questions electronically through the Q&A window in the lower right corner of your screen. A number of you have already submitted questions, and I have them built up in our queue, and I'll start reading those out loud in just a moment for our presenters to answer. If you haven't typed your question up, you can certainly do so now, so don't worry as we're asking and answering. Feel free to keep typing up and submitting more questions and comments. And if you're just participating on the phone lines, we're also going to take a break as well and allow our participants to ask questions out loud via the phones. But I'd ask that you hold until we get through the online questions first before we do that. So let's start with our first question. And one of our participants is asking if grant funds can be used to pay for a bookkeeper to manage paying invoices related to the project.
The answer is yes. Don't be confused when we say administrative costs. If you have an administrative assistant that is providing direct work related to the grant, those fees can be charged to the grant, or those personnel costs can be charged to the grant. So a bookkeeper, if they're working directly with the grant, yes, those fees can be charged. But if they're working on other administrative purposes, no.
This is Kathleen. Make sure, though, unless the person's working 40 hours only on brownfields, that the charges are for the hours where the bookkeeper directly dealt with the accounting for your particular job training project or grant.
Okay. Our next question comes in from a user who would like to know if it's possible to apply for this grant for a smaller amount of money to get funding to do the planning that would be required to put together a program that would be ready to implement. And if not, is there another source of funding that they could apply to try to get to fund their planning for this other project?
No. I don't know of any other resources out there just for planning. I don't know, Joe, what's your answer?
My answer would be no. especially since this is a really competitive grant program, that you should have a program that's ready to be implemented. You can come in and request less than $200,000, absolutely. But if you're just going to do planning, then this grant opportunity is not the right fit.
Okay. Our next user would like to know if, in order to be considered eligible, do all of the projects have to be connected to an EPA-funded project?
Not necessarily. We do want to see the connection, but since we expanded the program over the past 2 years, we want to see the connection with maybe there's a recycling facility in the community or wastewater activities that are taking place that aren't EPA funded necessarily. We want to see those connections. We want to see that the training being offered connects to the employment and the partnerships that you've created with those employers at those sites.
But the funds, EPA funds, must be used only directly on that portion of your program that is EPA EW DJT.
Okay.
Does that make
sense? I think it does. I think it does. And if they need any further clarification on that answer, you can certainly type up another clarifying question, and we'll bring that back into the speakers in just a moment. Our next user would like to know if they can pay for a participant to attend a college course with funds from the grant.
This is kind of a tricky question. I would say that when a reviewer sees that, and oftentimes I'll see proposals from community colleges, if it looks to me that the grant is being used to benefit the community college to pay for tuition or to provide scholarship costs, you know, I question whether or not we should fund that proposal. However, there's many instances where training might be offered and college credits are given for those different types of training. But oftentimes, you know, if we see a proposal and they say, well, we're only going to train three people, and we're going to have three cycles, and it's going to cost X amount of money to train one person, and all the training money is going to go to the community college. I don't think that proposal is going to score very well versus a proposal where they're going to train a much larger number of individuals.
Okay. Our next user goes on to ask, if we are focused statewide, do we also need to submit city or county level data with their application?
I think that you need to focus in more.
Right.
I mean, we understand oftentimes that there might be applicants, especially from rural areas, that might be serving several small towns, et cetera, but we would like to get specific, more fine-tuned details.
We know that $200,000 will not cover an entire state-ran program. So the state can be the recipient, but within that, we'll still want to know what geographical area has the top priority for this training, for this particular pot of money. That doesn't mean that you can't come back in every other year, and if competitive and you're selected, you can augment and add on to the geographical area you're serving. But we realistically understand that $200,000 is not a lot of money for you to say that you're going to target your entire state.
I think that we'd also really pay careful attention to the transportation costs, because more than likely that sends off a red flag to me that, you know, there's going to be some really heavy transportation costs. And I'm not saying that your proposal won't score well, but how many individuals are you going to be able to serve if you're spending 50% of your budget, you know? Or how are individuals going to get to the training facility if they have to travel 3 or 4 hours?
Right.
So, you know, you really have to carefully plan it.
Okay. Our next participant would like to know, how do we demonstrate if our proposal doesn't duplicate federal training grant programs? Do we simply state that our communities aren't in the awarded geographic areas?
Yes. I mean, more than likely, if you're in a metropolitan area, there's going to be a federal environmental job training grant. Maybe it's not going to serve the neighborhood that you're targeting, or maybe it's going to serve a different age group, or maybe it's only going to, maybe the other grant funding is only providing training in solar installation, but you want to do hazardous waste training with our grant funds. That's the information that you need to provide. And
so
we will also do screening with, I mean, I have partners at Department of Labor and the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences that will also conduct the screening. Say, wait a second, you know, we know that there's a grant project in this community. But do your research, look at the websites that we give you.
So it's not a simple statement. We're not duplicating. You have to substantiate why you're not duplicating, even though there's another grant in that area.
Okay. We have another user who went on to actually thank you for recognizing that continuing education should be considered an outcome. And they have a question, does acceptance into a community college environmental technician program count towards their placement rate?
We actually are in the midst of updating our reporting form now. In the past, we never took into consideration individuals that completed the training program but went on to pursue higher education. I think that we do recognize that that is a benefit to individuals and to society, but I think that Congress has really given us this money to train individuals and to put them to work, not to put them on a path that leads to higher education. We do consider that to be beneficial, but this grant fund is really meant to train and put people to work.
Okay. Our next participant is getting into the training time period. So I'm going to read a couple of questions regarding the years and time frames of the grants and when one can apply for the next batch of questions right now. So the first question asks, is the 3-year training period required because the trainees have to have refreshers?
No. No. The trainees do not have to have refreshers as required under our program. They do have to have refreshers, but that's not supposed to be the focus of this particular training program, is to provide those refreshers. You can do so for those coming back for the refreshers, but that's not, you won't garner as many points if that's your focus, rather than training people to go to work. It's not about, remember, it's underemployed or not employed people that are supposed to be your focus. If those underemployed are coming back for refresher courses and you didn't train them in the first place, I don't think that we would look at that favorably. Joe?
No, I agree with you, Kathleen. And we actually have a FAQ on this because we've had questions many years. Can the grant funds be used to provide refresher training? The answer is yes, but that's not the focus of this grant program. The focus of this grant program is to provide training and placement to severely unemployed individuals.
Okay. We have another user that is asking if you could elaborate further on the third year, and that they heard that you want the third year to be for tracking only. Is that correct?
We want the third year. We want training to be wrapped up by the end of year two. So your final graduation ceremony should have taken place by the end of year two. And year three should be devoted to reporting, tracking, and placement of any other individuals that have not been placed already.
Okay. And we have another participant who actually wants to know, again, is this a yearly grant? Can they expect about the same deadline for next year if it is?
I anticipate that we will have another competition this year. That depends on Congress. I mean, we've been running this grant program since 1998. However, times right now, it's very questionable what's going to happen next year.
Okay, great.
And we don't know when the RFP will be issued for the next round.
Okay. We have a user they're kind of getting into specific cases. So in this case, they're mentioning that their community college was a partner to a city that received a Brownfields training grant. And the community college is now planning to apply for a grant. Is the community college considered a new entity applying for the grant, or do they need to indicate that they had a grant previously because we were the training provider for the city that received the Brownfields grant?
I think that you should, in the programmatic capabilities section, state that you were a partner, but you were not the actual grant recipient. If you weren't the actual grant recipient, then most of those details and programmatic capability will not apply to you. But yes, you're welcome to come in and apply as the prime recipient this time.
Okay, great. Thank you. Our next participant mentions that their organization works with the labor organization that's currently receiving funding from the NIEHS to provide HAZWOPER training. Can the labor organization leverage this training to provide only HAZWOPER training to individuals in their program, or would that leverage make them ineligible for the grant?
I'm trying to think about this question. That's interesting. That's an interesting scenario. I mean, if you could leverage the HAZWOPER training, I'm inclined to say go ahead and leverage that training and certification through outside funds, such as NIEHS, and then use the EPA grant funds for other training. But again, make sure that your proposal isn't duplicating the NIEHS grant.
Okay. We have another participant that goes on to ask if personnel, such as a program coordinator for the training program, be considered an administrative cost that is prohibited.
It depends on how the job position is written up. We will not pay for general administration costs of the grant, but anything that is required by the grant for the program is considered programmatic costs. I will refer them back to the guidelines where programmatic costs are discussed and described in reference to what is not permitted as administrative costs. So, for instance, generating a quarterly report, even though that would be considered normally an administrative cost, we look at it as being a programmatic required task. So therefore, the cost for generating that quarterly report is eligible.
Okay, great. Our next user would like to know if you could repeat the tax incentives for employers URL. So if that's part of your presentation, I think, again, you referenced the URL for tax incentives for employers. If you could bring that back up.
It's on the Brownfields website, www.epa.gov/brownfields/job.htm. And there's a link to the fact sheet that we developed.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Hopefully you can individualize your response to that sub-factor and not just cut and paste everything.
Okay, great, thanks. All right, our next participant would like to know if it would be best to go for a grant for a particular city, or is it okay to go for a grant that would include an entire county?
That's going to depend on the size of the county and or the size of the city. Again, what Joe stated earlier, depending on the geographical region, the area, the miles that that targeted community is going to include, whether it's the whole entire county or the entire city, is going to be based on geography. How far does the training have to travel within those parameters to the training? You have to be realistic. And if it's a county, that means probably it's a rural county. So what about transportation? How will they get there back and forth? So I would say look at the county versus the city depending on the community that you're targeting and accessibility. Joe?
I agree. I would, you know, look at the size of the population. I think it just depends.
Okay. Our next participant would like to know if the grant partners are forced to be subcontractors, sub-awardees, or sole source.
No.
No.
I could be any. Partners, volunteers. A subcontractor is not a partner. They're offering you a service, an agreed-upon service, with a contract. Sub-administered to the grant. There's a difference between. That's the reason why there is such a thing as volunteers, which are considered the partners, and subcontractors and sub-grantees. So, no, partners are not forced into any role.
Okay, great. We have another participant who would like to know if there's a minimum margin size in the proposal.
You know, we don't try to get into that, but, I mean, use common sense. We don't have a set requirement necessarily.
Okay. Our next user would like to know if it's mandatory to have a GED before training.
I think you
depends on the employer.
Right. If you do your labor market analysis and your employer survey, you'll figure out what the trainee needs to have to be marketable in that market, in your particular market. Most of them want the GED because that indicates some discipline, a level of reading and math that are necessary for the job. But again, that depends on your labor market.
Okay. We have another user who kind of gives us a specific case for their particular application. And they mentioned that they're considering a customized approach to the training of veterans. They expect to have about 20 participants, and they will develop an individualized training plan for each veteran. This plan would indicate which existing training program, whether it's community college or local vendor, specifically fit their needs and the utilities, that would be best suited for them. Would that be considered scholarships if they funded a veteran to attend a specific class as part of this?
Again, that depends on whether or not they're going to pursue an AA under the community college, or they're going to pursue a certificated environmental training program. I think that's where you have to direct it, even though your program may encompass those three pathways. The only one that EPA would fund is that's going to be certificated environmental technician training. The way that they're describing it is a three-legged training program. We won't, as Joe said, the reason for our program is to put people to work. if at the end of the training, the certificated training program, one decides I want to pursue my education, we will look at that, but that cannot be the focus of the training program, is to put them in a community college to receive an AA degree.
I would also say that we have an FAQ that's been developed. We always have the question, what's the typical number of people to be trained and placed through a grant award? And we, in the FAQ, I think it says, typically there's 20 to 24 individuals per cycle. And usually there's 3 cycles per grant. So if you're only proposing to train 20 individuals through the entire grant, and it's okay to focus strictly on veterans, that's fine. But I don't think your proposal is going to score very high if you're only focusing on training a total of 20 people with $200,000.
Okay. Our next participant would like to know if you can provide a Word version of Appendix 3, the Other Factors Checklist.
A Word version of Appendix 3.
Right. It's, all of it is in the guidelines, and the guidelines can be accessed on our website, and it is PDF. Now, I can tell you how to make it a Word. You can go and scan all of it, copy it, and then paste it to Word if that's what you want, if you want a Word document but of Appendix 3. But basically, all of that is accessed in the guidelines from our website, and it is a PDF document.
Okay. Our next participant would like to know, in the community demographic section, are we expected to use the national numbers provided in the RFP? When I go to the U.S. Census website, some of the current numbers are different from the ones in the table in the RFP.
Again, that table was given as a sample. We do expect for you to do your homework. And where you find different numbers, as long as you cite the resource and the year that the data was taken from, it will be considered substantiated and cited. You must cite your resource. So that was a sample table. We don't expect for you to use our data, but I think that, the national averages are the latest numbers. Am I correct, Joe?
I think those should be up to date. I know there's controversy about, you know, what the actual percent minority rate is for the United States and who is classified as a minority. But as Kathleen said, this is a sample. I'd encourage you to use our statistics, but if you have other statistics, go ahead and use them.
As long as you cite the source.
Okay. Our next participant would like to know, what is the criteria for job placement? Is there a minimum wage, hours worked per week, or benefits that would be required for a trainee to be considered, quote, employed?
I think we want the individual to be placed in full-time employment. And full-time, in my book, usually equals about 40 hours per week.
Right.
If there's additional benefits, I hope there would be, especially since most of these jobs are pretty dangerous. You know, yeah, but we do not set or define all of those details. There's not an average wage that we, you know, ask applicants to meet, et cetera. And we know that it differs across the United States, depending on the cost of living. So.
Okay.
Okay. We have a user who would like some clarification. Are tribes allowed to train tribal members for the purpose of working for the tribe?
Yes, that's what we expect would happen, since they're a sovereign nation.
I would assume the tribe is not, or maybe it's the tribal environmental program where you want to place individuals, but I would question, what's the long-term reality of individuals working for the tribe? Is the tribe going to be able to hire all of those individuals?
Right.
I know sometimes it can happen, but I would question that. But yeah, we hope you benefit the tribe.
Okay, great.
But that also means that what Joe is saying is get some outside employer partners as well.
Okay. We have just a couple more questions that we're going to try to take online, and one of the next users would like to know, is job retention at certain benchmarks considered to be an output or an outcome?
Expectation is the 70% would be, your outcome would be the 70%. The output would be your actual placement number. One
okay.
is anticipated. The other one is, what did you do?
Okay.
I think that person's thinking too hard.
we have another user who would like to know if you could tell them what a good plan for retaining key employees might look like. What elements will you be looking for?
I suggest you go and talk to successful grantees. Again, we're at the stage where it's a competition and, you know, do your research. I don't mean to sound harsh, but, you know, this is a competition, so.
Okay. We have another user who would like to know if grant partners can be included in the budget in lieu of needing a contractor.
Partners aren't paid, so I don't understand what they mean by that. Partners are voluntary people. So the budget for partners would be leveraging. What are they leveraging? The resources that are you receiving. So in that instance, yes, we would expect for them to be listed in the budget in non-EPA funded activities. But other than that, I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Our next question comes in and asks if the focus of the proposal is to train individuals to clean up after a specific hurricane, do they still need to provide data on the setting of a brownfield site in the area impacted by the hurricane?
Yeah.
No. But you do need to provide information on environmental impacts in the community. If you just tell us there was a hurricane, that's not enough information. You could say, well, X number of, you know, Superfund sites have contamination that's, you know, spilled over or migrated. I mean, provide us more detailed information. Hopefully you would give us information about brownfield sites. But I'm not going to say that you have to specifically tell us about brownfields.
Well, okay, Joe and I basically are saying the same thing. I said, yes, you have to discuss it because you still have to show the impact to the targeted community that your purpose is for the grant. And so he's saying not brownfields, but isn't that what the hurricane would end up doing, is creating brownfields? And that's going to cause the economic impact? So I guess he's circumventing what I just said, and yes, not circumventing, but expanding on it.
Okay. Let me try to circle back to just one last question that came online. If we are currently operating with a workforce training grant, when would you recommend applying for the next one for the same target area? In other words, can you apply in order to start training in the third year while you are tracking and placing?
Yes, it's every other year. So if you receive a grant in 11, you sat out in 12, so you would be eligible to apply in 13.
Okay, great.
Hopefully you've recognized that there's other grant funds available or other funds that can help run your program too, and that you're not, you know, relying on EPA grant funds. That would be great.
Okay. And let's just take a quick moment for anybody who's on the telephone lines and might not be able to actually type up their questions electronically. If you're on the phone lines and you have a question, you're welcome to hit #6. And then feel free to identify your organization or yourself and ask your question. Okay. In the interest of time, since I don't hear anybody else on the phone lines, I'd like to just turn it over to Joe if you have any final statements or thoughts before I provide information on how to access the slides and provide feedback and close out today's session.
I don't think there's anything that hasn't been covered. It's been a long presentation today. And again, I just ask, especially the new applicants, not to be intimidated. We have a lot of resources available for you. Don't be discouraged. We have no idea how many proposals we're going to get from year to year. For a long time, I would say we got about 40 proposals a year. In FY11, like I mentioned, that was the year we received more proposals than ever. So it differs. Don't be intimidated. If you have questions on eligibility or the use of funds, feel free to contact the EPA, and we wish you good luck.
Okay, great. Thank you so very much. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and direct our participants to a few final resources before we close things out today. If you did enjoy what you heard today, we offer sessions like this all the time to the Cleanup Information Network. And if you like, you're certainly welcome to follow us or connect with us on popular professional and social networking sites like Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. An entire collection of resources has been pulled together for today's session, and it's available. You can find it on the seminar homepage. It's also under the related URLs pod that you'll see to the right-hand side of your screen. If you click on seminar resources, you'll actually be able to download a copy of the presentation materials, pull up other websites such as the Fiscal Year 13 Grant Guidelines website, and a number of other related resources that have been pulled together for today's session. And those links will remain active from this point forward. So if you're watching the recorded version of today's event, again, you'll be able to access these very same websites. For those of you that can take just a moment, I would ask if you could fill out the short feedback form. Again, you'll find that on the seminar homepage. You'll also find that as a related URL on the far right side of your screen. The feedback form does take just a minute. We do look at each and every one of the responses when you fill that out, and it does help us to maintain and continue to offer free sessions like this online. So if you'd like to continue with these types of events, please submit feedback and let us know what you thought today. If you shared the line with multiple parties, each individual person can complete their own feedback form. In fact, when you fill it out the first time, there'll be a link afterwards that'll allow you to let the next person hop on and fill out the form. If you don't have time to fill that form out today, it will remain active and available from this point forward. So for those of you watching the recorded version of today's session, you can also submit feedback based off of the archive that you're replaying as well by following that link to the seminar feedback form. For those of you who are requesting certificates or verification of your attendance today, we don't necessarily offer credits like CEUs or PDHs through CLUIN. However, you may find that if you keep a copy of the registration email, a copy of the presentation materials, and then fill out feedback and check the box asking if you want verification or confirmation of your participation, we will be able to send you an email that does at least confirm that you submitted feedback after the live delivery. And if you take that along with the other items I just mentioned, you might be able to earn credit from your accrediting institution. And again, each person can fill out their own form to get their own confirmation message, even if you shared the line under one registration. Today's session was recorded and will automatically be made available for free replay from the CLUIN website. It usually takes us about a week or so to do that. We already, though, have the first delivery from February 28th available for free replay from the CLUIN website. So if you simply visit cluin.org and navigate over to our training page and look for the archive seminars, you'll be able to find the previously delivered session. But as soon as we get today's session up and running, you'll also get an email, and you'll be able to share that email with anyone else that you think will find this to be a valuable expenditure of their time. I want to thank the nearly 120 individuals who joined us from all over the country today. I hope that you found today's session to be useful. I also want to thank our speakers from EPA Region 4, as well as the EPA's Brownfield office. I thank everybody for joining us.